DC Public Library Podcast is made possible in part by the Institute of Museum and Library Services and is a production of the labs at DC Public Library.
Ani buju kinya wia mino dijigat, ali indijinkas, odawa nadal, waganaka single dalak nadadaban dagus, mishikent ndodam. Nikwejanong ndojaba, Virginia nadida. Now in English, hi everybody, it's a great day. My name is Allie, and I'm a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians, and I'm Turtle Clan. I'm originally from Michigan, but I live in Virginia now.
Welcome.
Ooh, welcome, Allie. That was awesome. That was so great.
We are so excited to have you on Secret Passage.
We are thrilled.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. Storytelling is such a huge part of like my own upbringing, and it's a huge part of what I do now. And because of that, I'm actually really glad that we're doing this in the winter, because when I was a kid, winter was very much a time for like sort of turning inward and like spending time with your loved ones and your family. And you're really hearing stories about the world. You're hearing stories about the world around you. So in this case, stories were always a really important way to like pass on that culture, to teach lessons that needed to be taught. And it's really a good way to learn about Mino Bemadizawin, the good life. So it's important to live in a good way and not only to support your community, but to keep yourself healthy too.
Oh, I love that. And you just captured the heart of Secret Passage. If you could do, promos across the city for us. stories are such a wonderful way to recognize, respect, understand, and unite across cultures. And that definitely leads to the good life and healthy across the board in so many different ways. Oh, Allie, this is wonderful to have you here. We're kind of wondering about Indigenous storytelling. It is thriving right now. It is absolutely thriving. Yes. And we're hoping you're going to talk a little bit more about that with us. But first, if you could acknowledge all of the Indigenous ancestors who have made it possible for us to be in this podcast studio, that would be absolutely wonderful too.
Yeah, absolutely. So an important part of my introduction is that I did it in Anishinaabemowin, which is the language of my tribe and of my people. So the important thing to know about that though is that we are not from here. There is a separate Indigenous group. There are many Indigenous groups that still live within and around the DMV area. So before we really get into it, I wanted to acknowledge that the land upon which this library and all of our district's libraries stand is on the traditional land of the Anacostan people and of the Piscataway tribe. They have stewarded this land throughout the generations, and in telling these stories, in doing the storytelling podcast, we pay respects to their elders, we pay respects to their people, and we pay respect to the stories that they have told and will tell for generations to come.
I love that. Wow. Thank you, Allie, for so powerful. Such... Yeah, a great land acknowledgement. And just listening to you speak with such passion speaks to the fact that we are all in some way walking history and making sure that we maintain cultural memory. And so it's important that through this podcast, we're recognizing Indigenous people in present tense because they are still here with us today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love Allie's powerful statement, you know, the stories that we will tell, that we are telling that and that we will tell, because storytelling will go on and thrive and connect us. So similar storytelling atmospheres happen for a lot of us across cultures, whether we're gathered around the family table, whether it's bedtime stories, sometimes it's riding in the car or walking when you're sharing things with your family and friends. Sometimes it's the teacher or librarian read alouds. Allie, we're kind of hoping, Tor and I always ask this question of everyone on the podcast, if you tell us a little bit about your storytelling experiences as you grew up.
Yes, absolutely. So I really love, okay. this is actually something I really love sharing because I was really lucky to grow up in a family and in a culture that really values storytelling. So, you know, you sort of have this, like, you may have this sort of image of, like, you know, people sitting around a fire and, like, telling stories to each other, but that's quite literally what I used to do as a kid.
Oh, wow.
Something that was really fun that we would do sometimes is that, like, when the weather was starting to get a little cooler, when it wasn't, like, unbearably hot at night in Michigan, my family and I would go to a local campground, and we wouldn't spend the night, but we would go there so we could get a little, like, fire pit, basically, and we would, you know, make s'mores, we would do all of that, but we would also tell stories to each other. And, like, we didn't stay the night at the campground. We, you know, we would pack up and go home at the end of it. But, like, that environment was really, mm-hmm. really important. And it was a really good way for us to spend time with our families. So in addition to that, I was always really lucky to go to sort of, like, cultural camps as a kid. So, like, they would have these camps for, like, college prep, but also as a way for, like, you know, Indigenous youth around mid-Michigan to get together. They're still running today and they're great. But there we would actually have, like, elders from the community come in and tell us stories and teach us things. You know, there were like little giveaways. If, like, you went to so many, like, you know, sunrise ceremonies or whatever, like, you know, I always made it a point to go every single morning, even though, you know, I had to wake up at, like, six, but, yeah, I was really lucky because, like, I grew up hearing a lot of really wonderful, good stories, not just from, like, one person to one person, but as a group. So it really sort of helped to build that sense of community.
I love that. I'm thinking of, you know, you talked about storytelling around the campfire and particularly literally being around the campfire. And I'm thinking about my mom telling stories about growing up. And a lot of them are from the shared experience of her family having these backyard bonfires is what they would call them, but basically, you know, a cookout year round and just enjoying mm-hmm. that. And then, you know, the things that her brothers and sisters would get into. So that is awesome. So hearing all that makes me want to hear a story, and I'm pretty sure Tora is feeling the exact same way.
I am.
Would you be willing to share a story with us, Allie?
Absolutely. This is one of my favorites to tell because there's kind of a lesson behind it too. It's one of the ones I heard growing up. And even though you may have heard the story in a different way, this is how I heard it as a kid. So this is the story of the three sisters, and it's about how certain foods came to the Anishinaabek. A very long time ago, there were three sisters that lived together in a field. They loved each other very much, but they were very different. The youngest was Mushkadezimen, who was a baby. Mushkadezimen dressed in green and could only walk with a stick to support her. The middle sister was Kosman. She was an energetic girl who twirled all over the place in a bright yellow dress. The eldest sister was Mandamen, who wore a beautiful green shawl and had long flowing yellow hair. Mandamen stood the tallest and guarded her younger sisters against the elements. Together, they lived in that field and were very happy. One day, a young man came near their field. The sisters had never seen such a being before. His long hair was well braided, and he walked in beaded moccasins that quieted his footsteps, but left tracks wherever he went. The sisters watched as he spoke to plants and animals. And as night fell, he turned away, and they wondered where he went. The young man came by day after day that summer, and they watched from afar. One day, however, the youngest sister disappeared at nightfall. Mandamen and Kosman were terribly worried about Mushkadezimen, knowing that she couldn't walk well yet. Day after day, they cried and wondered where she had gone, until one day in the fall, Kosman too disappeared. Mandamen stood in the field alone and wept, waiting for her sisters to return. Her shawl grew faded and her beautiful long hair grew tangled, but still she stood in the field and waited for her sisters to return. Late in the fall, the young man visited the field after hearing Mandamin's cries. She was afraid when she saw him, but he said to her, "My name is Anishinaabe. Your sisters are not gone, but they are at my home with my mother and father. Will you come with me and be with them again? I will keep you all safe from the cold." Hearing this, Mondamin agreed right away and walked with Anishinaabe back to his home. There, she saw her sisters Mushkodezaman and Kosman, with Mushkodezaman standing strong and walking. Kosman was there too, twirling in her yellow dress, helping to fill the pot at the center of the home. From that day on, the sisters agreed to live with Anishinaabe and were never parted again.
I love that. That was amazing, Allie. I was, when you said the title of the story you were going to tell us, I immediately was like, oh my goodness, I'm one of three sisters. This is going to be so exciting to hear. And then as you told it and they're separated, I'm like, oh my goodness. And I was emotionally thinking about feelings of when I'm separated from them. But the descriptions of the sisters and were, they just immediately conjure images to mind, which is just really, really, really beautiful. You know, the littlest in her, in green with her walking stick and, wow. But I think I'm really getting excited about the story because you, as a STEMinist, as a confirmed STEMinist, I think this story is actually about science and growing and harvesting. And am I right? Am I sensing that correctly? Interpreting that correctly?
Yes, you got it in one. So I really love this story because I love food. So the names of the sisters are the clue that you have, because in Anishinaabemowin, Mushkodezaman means beans, Kosman means squash or pumpkins, and Mondamin means corn. Mm. So the three sisters are really three plants that are commonly grown together. So the really cool thing about this story is that it's not only a good lesson in how to take care of like things around you, but it's also a lesson in how each of these plants grows and supports each other too. So this is actually called companion planting. And in real life, this is a way for plants to help each other in the field. So corn, being the tallest out of all of them, serves as a trellis for the beans. And then the beans fix nitrogen in the soil and these help stabilize the corn stalks. And then squash, when planted near these other ones, their leaves are really big and they have those beautiful big blossoms. They shade the soil and they prevent the establishment of weeds. So together, they grow really, really well. And then when it's harvest time, they make an incredible soup.
You're going to have to make that for us sometime.
I think Tor
and
days,
I,
yes.
I think Tor and I are looking forward to having a tasting of that at some point.
Definitely. I think, one, the fact that the harmony that it takes plants, living things to grow, right, mm-hmm. is kind of the harmony that it takes humankind to grow and advance, you know, and that's something that's really important. And I really love this story because I thought about Mondamin standing in the field waiting for her sisters, you know, and I was thinking about my sisters as well. And it kind of got to me and it, but it also speaks to the process and patience that harvesting requires and how yielding crops takes properly tending them and caring for them. Like the young man who was coming by every day. So it elicited, of course, the emotion reminding me about my family, but also made me wonder about our current production of food and how food is harvested nowadays and what are some practices that we can use from the indigenous peoples to sustain us because mm-hmm. we need food to mm-hmm. live.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're right, Tora, it's absolutely, there's absolutely the teaching layer of how to be sustainable, but it's also a teaching layer about the harmful effect that we can have in our relationship with the natural world, you know, whether it's growing crops or disposing of trash or mm-hmm. We're all interacting with the natural world as we go about our lives and we not aren't necessarily thinking about it. Yeah. And that relationship needs to be healthy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So listening to the three sisters also brings to mind a certain type of folktale, a subgenre of within the folktales that's also about our natural world. And I don't know if anyone here in the podcast studio has ever asked themselves or if any of our listeners have ever asked themselves the question, why? Do you ever go about your day and wonder why as you're doing certain things or looking at certain things and thinking about them? Tor and Allie, do you ever ask why?
Definitely. I always ask why, maybe a little too much. But I think that a lot of our stories and folktales are created so that we can make sense of the world around us. So yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do too, because I really love being curious. Like before I came to the library, I used to work at a children's science center. And one of my favorite things was, you know, if a kid asked me like why something did or reacted in a certain way, you know, and I didn't know, the best feeling ever was finding out why together. So, yeah.
I love that. Finding out why together is absolutely true. So some of our listeners may have wondered about things that you see in nature, like not that we see anteaters on the streets of DC, but when you see pictures of them, you might say, hey, why do they have such long snouts? You know, especially if you're a fan of Arthur and you've seen the original first picture book of him. And then, you know, thunder and lightning, how exactly does that come about? Where does that come from? Or I've heard about these things called constellations that are star pictures in the sky, in the night sky in particular, being able to be seen. So in older times, when scientific knowledge was not able to explain these things, storytellers made up stories to explain them. They explained what they observed and then shared them. And these types of stories are called within by those people who study folktales, by anthropologists and those who specifically study folktales, it's called a pourquoi tale, which comes from the French, meaning why. Pourquoi means why in French. But you may speak another language at home. So think about the language that you speak and how you would say why. In Spanish, we would say por qué tales. So at their heart, it's a great example of across cultures, we are curious and we want to understand our world, including our natural world. And so we're trying to explain this. But the thing about pourquoi tales is we have the moral of the story, the lesson we're supposed to be learning, being much bigger than the science. So a little different than the three sisters. This is a bigger human lesson to be taught to all of us about not being boastful, not being greedy, not teasing, all of those things, or doing unto others as you would have unto them, do unto you. So it's a bit like a Bearstein Bear book. If you are a reader of those, or if you have ever read them once, then you know what I'm talking about. So I am thinking specifically about a pourquoi tale after hearing the three sisters, called How the Chipmunk Got Its Stripes. And this is a legend that has been told with variation by many Native American indigenous people and peoples. And it is at its heart about this, the story about how these chipmunks that we see running around, which, by the way, did everyone know that chipmunks actually hibernate? They do. They come to have this very distinctive black and white stripes on their back. Would everyone like to hear it?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Absolutely. All right, here we go. So this is a version told by the Oneida Indian Nation, which is an indigenous nation of American Indian people whose sacred and sovereign homelands are located in central New York. Okay, so Bear thought herself a very powerful creature and was always trying to exhibit her strength before other animals. But this led to a dispute with Chipmunk one day. Chipmunk asked, "Why do you boast so much, Bear? You have no great power." And Bear was very angry and declared that she had power. And in fact, she boasted that she could, if she wished, prevent the sun from rising in the morning. And Chipmunk looked at her and said, "You cannot. Wait and see, replied Bear. Well, Chipmunk was not to be fooled. He declared that he would wait. Oh, we shall have the sun at the usual time, said Chipmunk. Well, when the sun came up the next morning, Chipmunk laughed and made fun of Bear and her boasting. And this went on until Bear was so terribly angry that she turned on Chipmunk. And Chipmunk escaped, running for his burrow, which was close by. But even as he reached it, Bear was close, almost upon him. And so when she stretched out her paw to clutch him, Chipmunk slipped away into the hole, but not unscathed. Because the next day, Chipmunk appeared with three marks or stripes on his back. And these marks were made by the bear's claws. And chipmunks carry those marks to this very day. The end. So now that I've told that story, I'm wondering if our listeners can think of any other tales that they've heard that explain science in this way. Now, obviously, there's a scientific reason why Chipmunk has those stripes, but Allie and Tora, have you ever heard of a why or pourquoi story before that has explained something that happens in our natural world in a more moralistic way?
Well, I'm pretty sure I've heard many of them. I always think about, you know, cautionary sayings and tales, you know, my parents would use. But one of the stories I think of is Why Mosquitoes Buzz in People's Ears by Verna Ardima. It's a really old story, but it came to mind as you were telling the story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good one. It's, I think that might even have been my favorite Reading Rainbow book. 100% sure, but yes.
Oh, I love Reading Rainbow. Okay.
I know.
But, digress. right. Back to what we were talking about. When it comes to pourquoi stories, I actually heard quite a few explanation stories when I was growing up too. A lot of times the stories were lessons, right? And sometimes they would be funny, like this one is kind of funny, but sometimes they might be like sad or scary, but all of them are meant to teach you something, right? So another one that comes up in my mind right now, even though I don't know if it's been turned into a book yet, it's about the birch bark tree or wiguas. And it's how the tree got those really beautiful, like, stripes across its white bark. So long and short, it's basically because the birch bark tree in its youth was kind of a vain jerk.
Oh, that's a new way of looking at the
birch bark
tree. You make me want to hear that one. If it's not a written story yet, you should definitely write that, Allie.
We'll see.
For all of us. Well, how Chipmunk got its stripes there's a wonderful picture book version of it by Joseph Bruschak and James Bruschak that I encourage all of our listeners to borrow from the DC Public Library. And we'll talk more about recommendations later. That's usually our highlight at the end of the show. But let's move on to the big theatrical Reader's Theater storytelling experience. If you're new to Secret Passage, then you're in for a treat, because all three of us here in the podcast studio are going to perform a story for your listening pleasure. So it's a bit like listening to an old radio show. Today, we're going to tell a version of a story called The Queen and the Mouse. And it's a fairy tale from France. Yes, France is the country is on my brain because of Pourquoi, the Pourquoi tales. And but this story is a really good one to share, because this is a season, as we were talking about, and particularly Tora was talking about, when we reflect on gratitude and we're spending more time with family and friends. And before we dive in, I want to note that friendship can be very difficult for some of us. You know, it's different for each of us. Some people seem to make friends very easy and quickly. You might be thinking about the lunchroom. I think that's probably a time when we see a lot of friendship and in its many forms, and how easy it is for some of us and how it's not so easy for others of us, or it's a little different. You know, some of us are cautious, and there could be any number of reasons for that. I'm wondering if our listeners or if Allie and Tora have some thoughts about why someone would be cautious to make friends.
Yeah, thinking about this, I know sometimes it's really tough to come out of your shell, mm-hmm. right? Especially around people you don't know, or like if you've had bad experiences in the past, you know, putting yourself out there again after something like that happens, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think past experience can make you cautious to making friends. Mm-hmm. There's so much to just be cautious about, and you choose your friends, right? So there's a responsibility that you have to yourself and also to them when it comes to friendship. So I think that that may have an impact on how people make friends.
Oh, yeah.
And maintain friends.
Mm, yes. Yeah. Very true. Because sometimes friendship changes who we're friends with, and the friendship for people who we're with long-term over many years, sometimes that relationship changes too. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. So we're going to tell The Queen and the Mouse. It was first written in the late 1600s by a woman writer of fairy tales named Madame d'Aulnois. And it, at its heart, this is a story about friendship. So sit back, relax, and get ready. Here we go. Here is The Queen and the Mouse.
Once upon a time, a wicked king from a faraway place invaded the land where a queen ruled. This invader king captured the queen and her baby daughter as prisoners. When he returned to his kingdom, he shut them both into the highest room of a tall tower. The room was very tiny and very bare, with only a very hard bed. Then the enemy king sent for a fairy who lived near his kingdom. The invader king nearly pushed the fairy up the stairs to the queen's room. The fairy was touched by the sight of the queen's miserable condition. The fairy moved toward the queen and kissed the queen's hand, whispering,
"Courage, madam. I know you and your baby are being held prisoners in this tower. I think I see a way to help you both escape."
"Oh, thank you."
"Silence! All this whispering, I will not have it. I have brought the queen and her child here as captives for one reason and one reason only. Fairy, tell me this. Will this baby girl grow up to be a worthy bride for my son?"
"Indeed, your highness. The baby daughter of the queen will indeed grow up to have all of the graces, intelligence, and charms that will, in every way, make her worthy of a throne."
"Queen, it is lucky for the both of you that the fairy says it would be so. If the fairy had made a different forecast, both you and your baby would immediately have been hanged. I will save your baby's life to become the future bride of my son." Then he stomped off, taking the fairy with him and leaving the poor queen in tears. From the highest room of the tower, the queen could hear the king's son shrieking. She could hear the king demanding that his servants do this and that. From way down below, his mean voice carried over all other voices and noises.
"Oh, how can I look at my little daughter as she grows up, knowing she will be married to that horrid king's son? We are doomed now. If only I could hide her away somewhere, anywhere. There must be some place safe where the cruel king could never find her."
But where could the infant be hidden? Both the queen and her infant daughter were stuck, trapped as prisoners, in that tiny room at the top of the tower. As the days went on, the queen and little princess grew thinner and thinner. Every day, their hard-hearted jailer gave them only 3 boiled peas each to eat, so they were always terribly hungry. In addition, the king had a spinning wheel moved into the queen's room in the high tower. Now the queen was expected to work day and night, spinning fibers into thread. One night, as she sat spinning at the wheel, tired as can be, she saw a tiny, pretty little mouse creep out of a hole.
"Alas, little creature,
Little mouse, why are you coming here? We have only 3 peas each per day. So unless you wish to starve, I'm afraid you must go somewhere else for your food.
Rather than be discouraged at a lack of food to steal, the mouse ran hither and thither and danced and twirled so prettily that the queen clapped and laughed with joy. At last, she gave the mouse her last pea, which she was keeping for her supper, and she said,
"Oh, here, little one, I'm sorry I've nothing better to offer you. Your fine dancing deserves far more than this wrinkled little pea. You have brought my daughter and me great joy."
The queen had hardly spoken when a table appeared filled with a succulent roast partridge and 2 dishes of preserved fruit. She was amazed and quickly mashed a portion of the meat and fruit and spoon-fed her baby, who licked each spoonful with glee. As the queen ate with great satisfaction herself, she offered some to the little mouse. This made the little mouse dance even more charmingly than ever before.
There you go again. You are a delight, little mouse. My daughter and I are trapped in this high tower. We welcome you to visit us anytime you wish.
And so, the next morning, when the jailer brought the queen and the baby princess their daily allowance of 3 peas each, the little mouse was there. As soon as the jailer left, the queen gave the mouse all 3 of her peas. Instantly, the empty dish grew in size and was covered with all sorts of wonderful things to eat. Once again, the queen shared a feast with her daughter and the little mouse. But afterwards, as she sat at her spinning wheel, she began to worry.
"Oh, these fine meals could end any time. We are totally dependent on you, little mouse, to help us. What if something happened to you? Then there is the worry of my precious daughter, who is doomed to live as a prisoner and is to be forced to marry that horrid prince when she grows up. Oh, if only I could think of some way to save her."
As she spoke, the queen noticed the little mouse playing in a corner with some long straws. In a flash, an idea came to her. Joining the little mouse, the queen began to braid the straws.
If I had but enough straws, I could make a basket with them. Then if I let my baby down in the basket from the window, perhaps a kind passerby might take care of her and raise her in freedom.
Suddenly, the little mouse had dragged in more and more straw until the queen had plenty to weave her basket. The queen weaved all night while the little mouse danced for her. At lunch and supper time, the queen gave the mouse the 3 peas and always found something scrumptious in their place. She really could not imagine how all the yummy dishes appeared. Finally, in a few days' time, the basket was finished. The queen was looking out of the window to see how long a cord she must make to lower the basket to the bottom of the tower, when she noticed a little old woman down below, leaning on her stick and looking up at her.
"I know your trouble, madam. You and your baby are trapped in this high tower. If you like, I can help you."
"Oh, dear lady, if you really wish to be of use to me, you will come later tonight, after midnight, when the jailer falls asleep. Then I will put my poor little baby in a basket and send her down through this window to you. Take my daughter and care for her, love her, and raise her for me. When I'm free again, I will reward you splendidly."
"I don't care about any reward. And you can be sure your little daughter shall be well taken care of by me. But there is one thing I request. You must know that I am very particular about what I eat. If there's one thing I fancy above all else, it is a plump, tender, juicy little mouse. Perhaps you can give me one now, before I take your daughter. Yes, yes. Is there a mouse in your high tower? Just throw it down to me. That's all I ask."
Well, When the queen heard this, she began to cry.
Why are you crying? What is the matter?
Why, there is only one mouse in this high tower, and that little mouse is such a dear, sweet little thing that I cannot bear to think of it being killed.
What? You care more for a miserable mouse than your own baby? Oh, goodbye, madam, goodbye. I leave you to enjoy the mouse's company. For my own part, I leave knowing that I will find plenty of other plump, juicy mice without troubling the likes of you.
That night, when the queen's baby was fast asleep, she packed it into the basket and wrote on a slip of paper, "Here is my beloved but unfortunate little baby girl. Please raise her with tenderness and love." This she pinned to the baby's robe. Very sadly, she shut the basket. Just then, the little mouse appeared.
Ah, little one, it costs me dear today to save your life.
Believe me, madam, you will never regret your kindness.
The queen was astonished when the mouse began to speak, and still more so when she saw its sharp nose turn into a charming face and its paws become hands and feet. Then it suddenly grew tall, and the queen recognized the fairy who had visited her tower room alongside the wicked king many nights ago. The fairy smiled at her astonished look.
"I wanted to see if you were capable of real friendship before I helped you. You see, we fairies are rich in everything but friends, and true friends are hard to find."
"I cannot believe that you would lack friends."
"Yet it is so, for many are friendly with fairies for their own advantage. They want the riches that we can give. I do not count such persons as friends. But when you protected me as the poor little mouse, you could not have known there was anything to be gained by it. By testing you as in the form of the old woman whom you talked to from the window, I tempted you to forsake your little mouse friend, but you did not. And this made me realize that you are indeed capable of true friendship."
Turning to the little princess, the fairy said,
"Dear little one, I'm going to take you and your mother to my very own enchanted cottage, quite a distance from this wicked kingdom. There you both will be invisible to all others. This way the king will never find you, and you, sweet baby, will grow up safe and free with your mother beside you. And the power of friendship will protect you and your future."
In an instant, the fairy, the queen, and her baby vanished from the tower prison room, never to return. The end.
Oh, yeah. Well done. Confetti is falling from the ceiling here.
Jazz hands.
Jazz hands are happening. That was a story in which, I mean, this happens oftentimes on Secret Passage when we do the theatrical storytelling, Reader's Theater. But particularly this one, there were parts where I just wanted to, you know, emotionally say something. I just wanted to say, you know, to the king when he says your baby will be hanged, I want to be like, "Hey, bad guy, knock it off."
Mean, for real.
Mean one. So it's a shame that the dual role of listener and storyteller can be a very difficult one, but enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah.
So, for those of us who performed it, any thoughts as well?
It was a very vivid story. It was hard for me not to do movements as I was reading and listening to the story. It was definitely a true test of friendship, integrity, and so many things.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I thought this story was really very sweet. because it talks about like the importance of caring for others, even when you don't know that you're going to get something out of it. So yeah, I love the story. It's so sweet.
Yeah. Oh, so listeners of Secret Passage know that we're coming towards the end here. And before we close this podcast, we want to make sure we recommend titles that you should check out, which leads me to ask, are there any other stories, Indigenous science, Pourquoi stories, or any kinds of stories that Allie and Tora would like to recommend? And as they think about that a moment, I'm going to revisit How the Chipmunk Got His Stripes, and say that Joseph Bruschak and his son, James Bruschak, to come and borrow that version or place a hold online. This picture book, it has beautiful illustrations and the storytelling really plays up to the characters. And then there's a lot of repetition in it too, which is good for our reading skills and developing that. But Bear, and in the story, it's Little Brown Squirrel who becomes Chipmunk in the end. And there's lots of boasting and this she's a complete braggart who's saying, I'm the biggest, I'm the strongest, I'm the loudest, I'm Bear, I can do anything. Oh, yes, I can. Yes, I can. And, you know, Chipmunk just teases and says, oh, come on, you can really do anything? You're not that big. You're not that strong or powerful. And they end up staying awake all night. And a whole crowd of animals are gathering around to see if the sun will rise. And so there is made mention some of the science of our natural world, of the sun rising in the east and setting in the west, and a little bit about, you know, daylight and at this time of year and things like that. But it's just really beautiful. And you see the change of seasons. It's awesome. So I'm sure, Allie, are you familiar? And Tora, you're both familiar with Joseph Bruschak, I'm sure, because of he's just such a legend, actually, to children's librarians. Yes. And to the publishing world and to children.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I grew up with his books too. And you know, it's just like amazing. He's very prolific. He's written over 120 books for children and adults. And a lot of the stories that he tells are Indigenous in some shape or form. So he is a proud Milhegan Abenaki citizen and has said that while his Northeastern American Indian heritage is only one part of his ethnic background, it's his native roots those are the ones by which he has been the most nourished. And I just really love the way that that's said. That's so cool. He heard a lot of the stories that he tells from his grandfather growing up, and now he gets to tell stories with his son, James. That's just the coolest thing on the planet.
It is. It's this whole cycle of, it's just very, very cool. So, I'm sorry. We've digressed a little bit, and partly that's my fault. As always. So you're recommended, you've now had time to think, any recommended titles you might have for our listeners.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So on the note of Joseph Bruschak, one of my favorite books of his is called The First Strawberries. And I really love this one because this has been a story that I've heard in a couple of different places. It's been attributed to different nations, but it's about a man and a woman who are brought together by the power of strawberries. And in Anishinaabemowin, I have to mention that strawberries are called Odaminun, which translates to the berries of the heart berries. And, that's one of the stories that like my husband and I love the most. And we were actually able to incorporate strawberries into our wedding back in 2019.
Oh, so, nice. Sounds sweet.
They look like hearts and they're heart healthy too. So
better believe it. Oh, they're so good. I know. Okay.
And now we all wish we were at your wedding. Mm-hmm. Just see how you handled that.
Thank you. No. All right. Back to the books. With different authors, another book that I really love is called Bow Wow Pow Wow by Brenda Child. It is so cute because it's about a dream a little girl has on her way to a powwow, where dogs who normally aren't allowed to powwows are dressed up as dancers. And it, you know, talks about the different styles of dance and there's a bunch of different kinds of dogs. It's so cute. Okay. And the last one I have to mention, last two. So I always have to recommend The Water Walker by Joanne Robertson, as well as We Are Water Protectors by Carol Lindstrom. Mm. So both of those are really important because they talk about like modern indigenous relationships with water and other natural resources. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to be in a healthy relationship with the world around you. And both of those stories are good ways, not only to show how others have done it, but how you can do it yourself. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Those are great. This is hard to follow up to those suggestions.
Sorry, Tora. So,
I am going to keep it honest here. You know, I have to be honest. I don't necessarily have any recommendations, but there are two titles that I want to definitely read. The first one is Res Dogs by Joseph Bruschak. And then I've heard a lot of good things about Firekeeper's Daughter by Angeline yes. Booley. And I am really interested in reading both of those stories. So it's going on my long list of books to read, definitely.
And you know, that's another thing we could easily go in that direction too, is the many things every day that we are adding to our wish list. Because I'm sure a lot of our listeners and a lot of readers at DCPL, we are constantly scribbling down or taking a picture of a title that we just absolutely would love to get back to.
Yes.
Both of you mentioned recommended titles that have dogs as a part of their story, which makes me so happy as a dog owner. And I'm picturing my dog now, who jumps up to greet me every day when I get home, but jumps up not in a very like forceful knockover way, jumps up to like actually kind of be held, like picturing him like dancing in that position, which would be kind of cute.
So cute.
But anyway, it was just adorable. All right. Well, we have covered a lot of storytelling in this episode. Still thinking about Allie's retelling of the three sisters and the beautiful image of the yellow dress and the twirling. Oh, so gorgeous to describe corn. And the idea, we've talked about the idea that stories can be not only unite us culturally, but they can be scientific teachers. They're models on healthy relationships with our natural world and leading the good life. And it has been such a joy to actively in this podcast celebrate Native American storytelling, which I think all of us, all of our listeners, but especially those of us in the podcast studio will agree, should be celebrated all year long, said loudly and proudly.
Yes.
Don't just read these tales in November during the official Native American Heritage Month celebrations. Come to the library. We have lots and lots of Native American storytelling titles, and we would love to share them with you.
Yes.
And connect you with them because they are amazing, as this podcast shows.
Yes. Yeah. Allie, it was such a pleasure to have you as our guest on Secret Passage. You shared some awesome stories and so much about your personal life and story with us. And I know that this is going to be valuable to all of the people that are listening with us. So thank you so much.
Yeah,
we hope we hope everyone that's listening enjoyed their time with us. And we hope that you will come, like Tara said, to visit your nearest DC Public Library branch or dclibrary.org to start finding more life-changing stories. I am Tora Burns.
And I'm Tara Thomas. And you just listened to Secret Passage, a DC Public Library podcast recorded from the lab's recording studio in the historic, modernized Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library in downtown Washington, D.C.
You know, these stories were good. These stories were fun.
Yes, indeed they were. Until next month, when we hear another one, thanks for listening to Secret Passage.
You just tuned in to DC Public Library Podcast. Listen and subscribe at dclibrary.org/podcast or wherever podcasts are available. Send us your comments at DCPL on Twitter or follow us at DC Public Library on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for listening.